Hello, I'm David Sparks and joined by my co-host Rosemary Orchard, and this is The Automators, where we talk about how to automate your technology to do your work for you. Hello, Rose.
Hey, David, how are you?
I'm great. And as we record this, Apple had an announcement with a bunch of new iPads and updates, and we thought it would be a good chance for us to stop and check in on how we use iPad and how we automate iPad. So that's the schedule for today.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, you know, Apple doesn't necessarily update every product super frequently, but they definitely do, update various products on a regular basis. And when they do, it's always a nice opportunity to actually look at your devices and review your usage of them and whether or not it's worth upgrading, you know, because the temptation is always, ooh, pretty new shiny thing. I'm pleased to report the iPad Air is not purple enough to get me to be considering that, though the 13-inch is definitely something that I would be recommending for family members who are looking for a larger screen but don't need the power of the Pro. But as it is, you know, it's just a really great opportunity to go, what do I actually use this for?
Yeah, I agree. I think that the big size for the iPad Air kind of follows along with what they've been doing on the other platforms. The MacBook Air, the standard iPhone, you know, the non-Pro iPhone, both got bigger versions recently. And I like that. I mean, I know people who buy the big ones but don't need the Pros. So that's great for them. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of new iPads available. When we release this show, it's going to be a couple weeks after the event. So you're probably already familiar with a lot of the news. But before we get into it, I thought it'd be interesting for Rose and I just to kind of share what iPads we own and what we're doing with them and kind of as a precursor to how we're automating them. So Rose, what iPads do you own?
Well, I own two iPads. So I have my purple iPad mini, which is the iPad mini 6, which is the kind of, it's the device that is usually with me most of the time. If I'm leaving the house and I'm not sure if I'm going to need a device, but I want to take one with me, the iPad mini 6 is the one that will go in the bag. And the other one that I own is the 11-inch iPad Pro 4th generation. So the one before the release that we've just had, which I use with my Magic Keyboard. And yeah, those are my two iPads right now. What about you, David?
I've got the whole set, kind of. I have the 13 and the 11-inch from 2018. I'm not sure which generation it is, but when they switched over to the kind of squared-off form factor that they still more or less have, I've got one of each of those. I have an iPad mini, I believe, 5, but my daughter has been using it a lot, and I'm not sure if I could still call that as my own at this point. But it's... You know, I've had a lot of iPads for a while, and like with this event coming up, I was very curious about what's going on. I kind of feel like I want to upgrade, but I'm not really sure. The way I use the iPads, it varies, but I do use it as a productivity device, although I'm pretty tame in that. Like, I use it kind of within the constraints of what an iPad is. I mean, that's the big knock against the iPad is there's a bunch of stuff you can do on a Mac that you can't do on the iPad. But at the same time, there's a lot of stuff that is very useful on the iPad that I find more productive and delightful, I guess, for lack of a better word, on the iPad. Like, I do a lot of reading on it. I do, like, my day management stuff. I've got a little chair in my studio, a little leather chair, and I sit there in the morning, and either in Vision Pro or on iPad, I go through OmniFocus. I look through my calendar, sort things out. I answer emails. I dictate a bunch of text, and all of those things are really easy to do on iPad. And I feel like the magical piece of glass that Apple talks about kind of is true for that kind of work. So I'd say that's probably the first big use I have for it is just the little daily task kind of stuff getting me away from my desk. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, I spend a lot of time sitting at my desk. I have my day job where I'm sitting here 8 hours a day. But also, I like to travel. So one of the things that I do use my 11-inch iPad Pro for in particular is specifically, you know, as a portable entertainment system. So if I am potentially going somewhere and maybe getting on a plane, for example, then I will, you know, load up my iPad in advance with a whole bunch of, you know, films and TV shows and things like that to watch, so that I can watch them, you know, on planes and trains and so on. I've got quite a bit of flying to do soon. I'm going to Taiwan to go to Computex, which some folks will have heard about a little bit through their spot on the last episode. And so, you know, that's something where I am going to be using my iPad heavily, because you can fit a laptop on a tray table in an airplane. But an iPad takes up considerably less space, which is quite nice, you know, if you don't want to be, you know, taking up all of the space that's available to you with one singular laptop.
Yeah, I'll second the nomination there on the airplane stuff. It's just so much better, especially like if the person in front of you tilts their seat back and all that. An iPad to me is the only technology that I've used on airplanes for years.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I have used other devices on planes, and I probably will. But, you know, the fact that I'll be able to have my iPad and just, you know, be watching things and also use it like in my hotel room and stuff like that as well, you know, without having to, you know, worry about, you know, figuring out a way to connect something to the TV and carrying a universal remote and stuff with me. That's yeah. So that's definitely, you know, one of my uses. And that's probably a very common use case. But the other way that I use the iPad is to kind of give me a little bit of a context change. So, you know, I do want to get out of my office. But when it comes to doing things like my OmniFocus weekly review of the projects and so on that I've got in OmniFocus, I do explicitly try to do that on my iPad. So I'll grab my iPad, go somewhere. You know, sometimes it might be, you know, a cafe in town, or go sit on a bench or a picnic blanket in the park as the weather's getting nicer. Or it may just be go sit in my living room and go through this. But I find that the act of getting away from my desk with all of the other distractions and kind of forcing myself down to not a monotasking system, because you can do more than one thing on the iPad at once very easily, you know, with Stage Manager now. But, you know, trying to get away from something where it's so easy to open up 78 billion tabs and, you know, you know, just be running multiple things simultaneously is very useful for that. And similarly, I will also use it for sort of like dumping things out of my head into drafts, you know, just quickly create a whole bunch of drafts, just, you know, type command N, type command N, type command N. And then afterwards I can process them and deal with them. And that, you know, that makes me quite happy whenever I'm doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I find it really kind of useful, but it is definitely not a Mac. Like there are things that I can do on the Mac that just don't really work on iPad. Another usage I have for iPad is I've gotten really into 3D drafting and design over the last, you know, year or so between my 3D printer and the woodworking stuff. I've really latched onto the Shaper 3D app, and it's great and really good for design work. And with an Apple Pencil, it just works. It's fantastic.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I am intrigued by with the new iPads, with the new Apple Pencils, because I don't use my Apple Pencil as much as I could. I'm aware of that. You know, and there are definitely people out there who will use it a lot more than I do. But I do love being able to just pick it up and quickly draw a diagram and sketch something out. And, you know, also they use the phrase barrel roll in the presentation. And that is always exciting to hear. You know, if you type do a barrel roll into Google, it will still do a barrel roll.
Oh, really?
On screen. Same as if you Google recursion, it will actually, you know, send you on a recursive pattern to explain what recursion is, which is quite entertaining when somebody doesn't get it and you see them click the thing about five times and then it dawns on them. But yeah, as it is, you know, yeah, there's just so much that the iPad is great for. In particular, for me, I love the fact that there is the Magic Keyboard. And I don't use the Magic Keyboard on my iPad Mini. I have a case from Moft, which will allow my iPad Mini to stand up a bit higher when it's propped up. I find that, you know, it's nice to be able to use it in landscape, but also just grab it and have a small portrait handheld device. You know, I have had the 13-inch iPad Pro before, And it was excellent for doing a lot of things. And I suspect, especially now that Shortcuts and Stage Manager have come in, it would be a lot easier to, you know, do my fun automation tasks on there. But I didn't find that it offered me a huge number of advantages over the 11-inch iPad, and it came with the downside of it weighed a ton. So I didn't take it places unless I knew I was going to want it. And as it is now, I'm very excited because I always have something that's more than my iPhone for allowing me to, mess with Shortcuts and things like that. You know, I was on the train to London the other day, and I could have done what I wanted to do on my iPad mini. On my iPhone, but I had my iPad mini. So I did it on my iPad mini, and it was a much nicer experience just because I had a bit more space and I could open two versions of Shortcuts and things like that. And it all adds up to, you know, be a better experience having that larger screen.
So if you have to pick one, is iPad mini the one?
I don't know, because the problem with the iPad mini is if you get a screen, like a keyboard that actually fits the size of the iPad mini, it is too small to type on. You know, like you're missing buttons in places and stuff like that. You know, I have one. It's a faux Magic Keyboard that connects via Bluetooth, and it's fine, but it weighs a ton. And so, you know, by the time, you know, you've got the iPad mini plus that keyboard, it's like, oof, okay, this, you know, my handbag, which went from being exceptionally light, is now like, oof, like, you know, my arm's falling off type thing. So, yeah, I don't know, because the 11-inch is just so, it's such a good size. It's a Goldilocks size for me. So I think it's probably the 11-inch, as much as I love that 7.9-inch screen.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the question. And it really depends what you do with it if you're traveling a lot. When you're on the road, the iPad mini almost disappears in your bag. And that is really nice. But the iPad 11-inch kind of can do everything. Like, for instance, like the 3D design stuff I'm doing, it's just, I don't think it would work very well for me on the iPad mini. I just don't have enough room to work. And I like to read sheet music on my iPad. And it's another thing where on the iPad mini, it's just way too small for me to read it. And so I really go back and forth. Like, so I'm in a weird spot. I've got a really old, two really old iPad Pros. And I think I may be able to get my iPad mini back if I want. So it's like, I don't know if my future is dumping the iPad 11 Pro or giving it to my wife and just keeping the 13 when I'm working at home and I want the big screen and the mini when I'm on the road, or getting rid of all of them and just getting an iPad 11-inch Pro, making it the one iPad to rule them all. But I'm actually really up in the air about what the right iPad for me is at this point. But I think we both use these things to get work done. It's not just consumption devices.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And it's so difficult to just pick one when you do actually use them for output as well as input. And that's not to say that, you know, reading things and so on can't be productive and useful. It absolutely can. But especially when you're producing things, that makes it much more difficult to decide on what is, you know, the actual, like, correct device for you, because it's contextual. It depends. So, yeah, I mean, there's so many good things about it.
Well, I mean, just most of the stuff I do, like, you know, day one entries, drafts entries, OmniFocus work, all that stuff works just fine on the iPad mini. Yeah, you know, that's the thing, right? So it does most of the little things I do, and even just watching video, that screen's big enough for me. It's just when I get into the more creative work that I wish I had more pixels.
Yeah. And that is definitely something where sometimes you just can't see enough of a thing on a screen. And it's really hard to say to do anything about that unless you can get a bigger screen.
So Rose, let's talk about how we're automating these things. Or the automators. We got stuff we do. We both have a bunch of stuff on our list here. So I thought we could just jump back and forth. I'll tell you one thing about automation with the iPad for me is this is the only platform that I use the Shortcuts widget. Like I have a series of context-based buttons, and I've talked about it before on the show. Like I've got one called Personal and one called Max Sparky. And so it's a choose from menu shortcut, and it's got like all of the most common stuff I do. As an example, on the Max Sparky one, there's like set up a new project or add a task to OmniFocus, or, you know, just all of the kind of stuff I do, even stuff like, you know, go to my bank website at this specific URL. And so stuff I do commonly, I run out of that little magic button, and I'm constantly updating it and adding things to it and taking things away from it. But I find this one of my favorite automations, because on iPad, it's really, you know, sometimes more difficult to do things like go to a specific URL or set up some of this stuff, and having it all just attached to a single button works really nice. I do the same thing on my iPhone. And what I do in the iPhone is I export the shortcut as an app icon, and then I put it in my dock. So the dock on my iPhone is these choose from menu shortcuts that I can do most of the important stuff in my life in. But because the dock space is limited on iPad, and I like to put a lot of apps down there, what I do is I use the shortcuts widget on iPad, and I put those in the small, I think, 2x2 shortcuts widget that gets me shows me four shortcuts. So that's the first automation thing I do differently, is just the way I launch this like really critical shortcut is I put it on the desktop.
Yeah. I find that I still don't really use the shortcuts widget. I did recently add one to my iPhone home screen, which will get me the, it'll open a specific page for the next like train times, depending on like what's in my calendar and so on, which is pretty cool. But on my iPad, I tend to just do spotlight for everything. And it works surprisingly well. It will find shortcuts and everything else because it's part of, you know, the Spotlight integration with it now. So I'm pretty happy about that, to be honest, because it makes my life a lot easier. I'm already using the keyboard for everything. So, you know, why wouldn't I want to be able to use it for this too? And I definitely can.
The shortcuts is the key platform of automation. I mean, one of the downsides of iPad is it just doesn't have the openness for automation that the Mac does. Like, you know, an app like Keyboard Maestro couldn't exist on the iPad. And that really is the reason why a lot of times I will take a MacBook Air instead of an iPad with me, because of the way I've wired automation on my Mac so much more than I have on an iPad. But I will say that the iPad with shortcuts, there is a lot you can automate. And I think we're probably both of us going to be focused on a lot of shortcuts based automation today.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's not the only thing that's going on there, but it is very definitely something that it's so easy to do right on the iPad, because obviously there's Drafts and there's OmniFocus with Omni Automation as with the rest of the Omni Suite apps. And there's other apps as well, which do a whole bunch of great automation things, you know, like Secure Shellfish and so on, which allow me to, you know, connect to other machines. And there's stuff built into that. But at the same time, Shortcuts is kind of, you know, the basic thing upon which everything else gets called, or at least it is for me. You know, a lot of things wouldn't happen for me unless I had shortcuts in the background, making sure that I actually ran the things.
Yeah. One of the other automation platforms, though, that I do use often on iPad is Drafts. I mean, iPad for me, in a lot of ways, is just a writing machine, and I love it. I like the, you know, it's simple to use. You can limit the context of it and limit the interruptions of it. So it is kind of a unitasker, even though we just got done saying it's not really. But with Drafts, you know, and a keyboard and using Drafts automation, there's just a ton of stuff I do in shortcuts. I'm sorry, not in shortcuts, but in Drafts, using Drafts automation to send text to all sorts of places on my iPad and off into the internet.
Yeah, and it's amazing how much stuff you can get done. And also, sometimes just how many things, you know, that you can just sort of experiment with a little bit, and it's really easy to do because Shortcuts is right there, and you just pull in a couple of blocks and bam, you know, thing you know, tested, or you needed to create a list of like 17 items. But, you know, it was like you had to prefix them all with numbers or something like that. You know, it's very easy to do something like that in shortcuts. Once you've, you know, you just write down a list, split it, maybe use the file action to sort it, and then repeat with each to add the numbers. And yeah, without it, I think working on the iPad could be a lot trickier than it is, because it's a shame that, you know, a lot of people seem not to take the iPad seriously for work, because it can be a very good work tool. But fortunately, because of the automation tools out there, I'm actually able to use it as that, and you are as well, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why some people complain, because it's not a work tool for every kind of work. I think the Mac is way more flexible in that regard. I mean, podcasters always bring this up, but on the Mac, it's rudimentary to be on a Zoom call like we are right now, but have a separate app independently recording audio, which is what you need to make a podcast. And for whatever reason, they've just never enabled that on an iPad. So there's all these kind of like hard stops you hit on an iPad with certain kinds of work. But if your job is dealing with email, writing, you know, just kind of doing the basics of, you know, information work, it can do a lot of it for you.
Yeah, exactly. And it's one of these things as well where, no, not every device or operating system is going to be ideal for everybody to do their job or to produce whatever it is they need to do. But at the same time, I think it is, you know, it's easy to undersell the iPad. There's so much that I do with it all the time. But, you know, it's pretty awesome to be sitting there and just be like, okay, I'm just going to update my website. And I have a static website. This is not something where I can just log into a web page and mess around and type things into a web page and then have a look in a different tab and see what it looks like. I have to, you know, write code and then have it compiled and so on. And I have a system set up where I can actually do that. And that's great. I love that.
Yeah. I think you, you know, you just have to find where it can fit. Like for me, one of the reasons why I write so much of my automation about project creation in shortcuts is because I find it really easy and convenient to create project setups on iPad. Because a lot of times I'm doing communication on iPad, email and whatnot. And so somebody says, yes, I want to do that thing with you. And it's on this and this date. Well, I want to be able to set that project up. And shortcuts on iPad can do that very easily. And like in the previous years I would set those up in Keyboard Maestro, you know, go create a note, create an Obsidian note, create a calendar event, you know, set up an OmniFocus template, etc. And I realized that I know I really need to do that on iPad, because often the confirmation happens when I'm sitting in my comfy chair answering email. And that, you know, putting in shortcuts made that possible.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And for me, you know, what I've done over time is, you know, I do want my automations to be platform agnostic where appropriate. So for example, logging timestamps to give to our wonderful editor, Jim, for the show notes. So if there's anything in there that we need to take out, or just where we have a quick pause, we can put those in. That is not an automation that needs to be platform agnostic, because I will be sitting down at my Mac to record the show. But something like creating a project or sending an email that's got a particular series of information in it and things like that, that's something where maybe I'll run it from my Mac, maybe I'll run it from my iPad, maybe I'll run it from my iPhone. And I want to be able to do it in all the places. So I tend to start with the iPad as the common denominator, because out of all the platforms, it actually generally, usually has the least features natively in shortcuts. For example, it cannot vibrate. So I can't use the vibrate action. Neither can my Mac. But that's okay. It could have cellular, but it doesn't always have cellular and things like that. Yeah, I've ended up with some really great shortcuts for things like that. And it's amazing as well how some of these have evolved over time, which, you know, maybe we need to talk about how we're clearing up some of this stuff in the background, David, because there's definitely some things maybe that I could do with improving there. But, you know, there's some really great integrations in particular between Drafts and shortcuts, and also in my case OmniFocus and shortcuts, because that's what I'm using to get a lot of this done. You know, I'll have something, you know, pop up and ask me, okay, what's the name of the project? Choose from these templates, which are stored in Dross, and bam, pull it in, replace some information, pop it over to OmniFocus, and done. Next.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of platform agnostic automation that I think you should be thinking about when you're choosing platform automations. And for me, the iPad is always underlying it because I do like to do processing and work on the iPad. So I want the ability to do that type of work on the iPad. And fortunately, the automation is mature enough on iPad that this is something that I think is very possible for people to do now. Another one that I've been using a lot, and I've been talking about Whisper Memos because that's just happens to be the one I've kind of landed on, but there's a lot of apps right now that you talk to and they use Whisper transcription to do it for you. But I find that's another type of automation, of text automation, that really suits itself to the iPad. You know, sitting there in front of the iPad, get the microphone running, and then you can still have resource information you're looking at.
Yes. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's amazing how many of these tools have just got better and better and better since, you know, the iPad has been around. And, you know, some of these things have come into existence only because of the iPad. So, for example, one of the applications that I use quite frequently for automating things and just like doing niggly bits that I would otherwise have to reach for a Mac for on my iPad is A Shell. So A-Shell. There's also A Shell Mini, but it's a terminal on your iPad. And it allows you to, you know, work essentially from the command line, which is not something that necessarily everybody's going to want. And I get that. I'm totally fine with that. But for me, when I need to do something that I know exactly how I would do it on the command line, and maybe Shortcuts doesn't have the right actions for it or something, then it's really nice to be able to just reach for A Shell to do things like that. And especially with a keyboard, it's very easy to do.
You also mentioned that you're using automation via Stage Manager on iPad. What are you doing there?
Yeah, so this is something I've been experimenting with a little bit. And it's not something that is I'm necessarily doing a lot of. What I am doing is I've been experimenting with a couple of automations for when I turn Stage Manager on or off. So usually if I turn Stage Manager off, it's because some application is not playing ball quite in the way that it's supposed to. There's something weird going on. I don't know exactly what it is. But if I turn it off, I don't currently have anything set up. But what I have done is when I turn it back on, I'm experimenting with specifically opening a couple of applications at the same time. And so there's a native Shortcuts action for opening something in split view, which doesn't work as a split view when you've got Stage Manager enabled. But what it does do is it opens up those two applications in their own window of Stage Manager, essentially, or in their own desktop on Stage Manager. So for me, that's OmniFocus and Drafts, because if I've been doing stuff and I turn Stage Manager back on, I'm always happy to have those two opening in front of me. That's fine. And then it's very easy, if necessary, to tap back to whatever it was that I needed. But one thing I have been playing with is plugging my iPad into an external monitor. And so when I plug my iPad into an external monitor, I am then making sure Stage Manager is turned on, because that seems to work very well for me on the iPad. I'm still not using Stage Manager on the Mac. It doesn't quite gel with my brain there. But on the iPad, it's working pretty nicely.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Another thing that you do that I like is using automation to toggle cellular. And that's primarily a podcasting thing. But I think if you go into meetings or go anywhere where you don't want your cellular radio to cause your iPad to start making noise, that's a useful automation.
Yes. In my case, specifically what I do is when my podcasting focus mode turns on, I turn off cellular. And then when my podcasting focus mode turns off, I turn cellular back on. And the reason for this is very simple. If the cellular iPad gets close to the XLR cable that my microphone is plugged in through, then you get a bit of, or something that may sound like a helicopter taking off. it is not a pleasant experience for anybody involved. And to avoid having to, you know, deal with that and either have Jim do lots and lots of hard work or us having to re-record every single episode until I finally get it right, I just set up an automation to disable that. So if my iPad is on my desk and near the microphone, then I don't have to worry about it interfering with the recording, because that seems like a much more sensible approach to solving that problem than potentially any of the other ones. You know, I could turn on airplane mode, but I don't need airplane mode. I just need cellular turned off.
Yeah, another thing I do a lot is OmniFocus, and that is shortcuts based exclusively. But I have shortcutted the heck out of OmniFocus. And so, like, project creation, view setup, all that stuff, and I run all of that on iPad, and it allows me to really make my task manager go fast. Some of the new JavaScript stuff is finding its way in as well. I mean, the reason they built it that way so it would work on iPad. So I find a lot of automation going on in task management. And I really like to not spend a lot of time with OmniFocus on my Mac when I can avoid it. Like sitting down in the morning and setting up the day, and then I usually write it down on one of those Ugmunk cards, what I'm actually going to do the day, that's usually enough. So where project and task management doesn't really happen too much during the day, except capture, and then I can go back later to the iPad. It's another example of having that separate space and that separate context to keep the work separate.
Yeah, and I think that is, you know, something that is easier to get with the iPad, because you can just take it somewhere and do something with it, and it's not a big deal to do that. And also, the battery life lasts a long time. Yes, the battery life in the new MacBooks, it can last an exceptionally long time. But if you haven't used it in a while, then I feel like in my experience, it's much more likely that the battery is going to be gone versus the iPad, which somehow seems to just keep going for ages, which is amazing. I love that. So yeah, I find it feels less like I have to do lots of work when I sit down with an iPad, but when I sit down with an iPad to do work, I still feel like I can get a lot done, which it's a nice balance between the two, with, you know, a little less stress and then, you know, plenty of good solutions to various things there as well.
Text automation is another area where I find automation useful on iPad, because I do so much writing there. I feel like the Grammarly app on iPad has got a lot better in terms of doing the Grammarly bits, where it goes through and tries to rewrite and fix text for you. And it can work in any app. And I really like the way they've kind of integrated it over the years. So that's a good automation tool for me. I mean, any type of text automation you can do, you know, fill-ins or text replacement, all of that stuff works on iPad.
Yes, yeah, it does. And it's, you know, it's amazing how good this stuff can be as well. You know, I've used a couple of apps over the years to do a whole bunch of automation things. You know, I started out back in the day with Editorial, you know, Editorial was amazing. And obviously I'm not using Editorial anymore. I believe it is still on the App Store. What I tend to be using for that is Textastic. And Textastic is great because it is just, it's kind of like a miniature version of BBEdit, but it's on the iPad. But because of the way that you can just like point it at an entire folder in iCloud, and you can also like have it run as a mini servers for other devices to connect to like look at things and so on. And it's got like a terminal built in. Like, so if you're trying to edit something and upload it to a server, like it can do that and so on. It's pretty awesome. And, you know, it ties in as well with other apps that, you know, will allow you to get things done, like working copy. So, you know, that for me is really great. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily sound like it's automation related, but believe it or not, using the correct like text encoding, or not text encoding, sorry. I've forgotten what it is, but you know when you open a file and different words are in different colors because they mean different things.
Syntax
highlighting. Thank you, David. I had one of those brain moments where I didn't have a brain.
All right.
But syntax highlighting, and Yeah, syntax highlighting, and not only syntax highlighting, but therefore the correct like autocomplete. So when you type a certain kind of bracket, it automatically closes it. Or it knows that this tag has already been closed or something like that. That is automation. Okay. If you've got the right app that actually helps you with things like that and make sure that you can, you know, see what it is that you need to do, because you are writing a JSON file, for example, or you're editing a JSON file and you just, you know, you mess around with it a little bit and it seems okay. But then actually when, you know, if you had a bigger screen to look at it, you might see that it wasn't okay. But with syntax highlighting, even on, say, an iPad mini screen, it can highlight it and be like, hey, red squiggly underline, there's something wrong here. You'll need to fix this, which is really great.
You know, I was going through this in prep for the show, and I know one app that I don't automate or particularly use on iPad, and I think this is kind of a platform limitation. It's Obsidian. You know, Obsidian has a perfectly adequate iPad app, but I just don't like the way every time I load it up, it has to catch up with data. It doesn't look like an iPad app at all. And it does have automation available to it, but I find when it comes to Obsidian, I do it on a laptop or a desktop computer, and I don't do it on an iPad. It's just, I guess it's a quirky thing about me.
Yes, perhaps. But at the same time, I will give a shout out to a little app called Actions for Obsidian, which can allow easier automation of Obsidian on iPhone and iPad, because it specifically shortcuts actions for Obsidian. And it connects specifically to the Obsidian like Vault folder on your device. And then you need to enable community plugins and the actions URI, and then it will do magic. Like, I don't exactly know how it works underneath the hood, but it works pretty well. And I have to say, when I've been using it for automating with Obsidian, then I have definitely found it to work exceptionally well.
Any other favorite automations on iPad?
Oh, I mean, it's so difficult to say, David, because one of the things that I have, you know, really tried to do over time is just like, you know, narrow this down so that I don't have too many things happening in too many places. But at the same time, I do reach for my iPad for just so many things, whether it's, you know, accessing and editing my Home Assistant setup. So I do use my iPad for Home Assistant, or, you know, messing around with, you know, Scriptable, for example. That's one we haven't talked about today, but both of us have definitely used, and I'm still using. You know, it's there's so many things I'm doing. It's hard to put an exact list of the exactly what I'm doing together, but I will continue to have a look. And if there's anything else, we can always talk about it in a follow-up episode.
Yeah. And I think the theme that came out of today is look at the way you're using the iPad and then look at automation routines that make sense for that. I feel like personally for me, a lot of them are text related and kind of setup type related stuff, you know, setting up files in various apps. So long as they're supported on iPad and shortcuts, I can do a lot of that kind of what I would consider busy work sitting at my iPad on the couch. And I really like that. So I can save the time spent at my desk to actually, you know, do the work as opposed to fiddle with setting things up. And the iPad has really found a comfortable place for me in that way. And as a result, most of my automations are aimed in that direction. And Rose gave me some great ideas today about screen setups and stage managers. I'm going to be checking into that as well.
Yeah, that's definitely something that once you figure out what it is that you want or need, it's a lot easier to play with it than it is just kind of like as an abstract thing. And for me, the difficult part there was definitely taking the time to figure out what it was I actually wanted and needed. You know, and I am just going to finish the section by giving a shout out to two apps that I have only just started playing with, so I can't really talk a lot about yet. But Pyto, P-Y-T-O, and Rubyist are both recent additions to my iPad. So I'm going to be playing with those and talking about those more on a future show.
Well, can you give us a brief summary of what they do?
Well, Pyto is for writing Python, and Rubyist is for writing Ruby. So these are definitely more off of the nerdy end. I will admit that. But at the same time, they are good options to have if you would like to, you know, break out of shortcuts and, you know, get more into writing some actual code. And, you know, maybe something like Jellycuts, which recently went open source, I should note, isn't for you because you don't necessarily want to be picking up a new language and you fancy writing in Ruby or Python or JavaScript, then there are some great apps out there for you.
Yeah. All right. Well, let us know what you're thinking about automating your iPad. You can go over to talk.automators.fm. There's a forum there. Lots of good advice. Lots of smart people. We are the Automators Podcast. You can find us at relay.fm/automators. And if you want to sign up for the ad-free extended version of the show, Automators Max, you can do that at the same place, relay.fm/automators. And we'll see you next time.
Goodbye, folks.